of staff to recognize here. We're very appreciative. We'll go ahead and call our regular session to order, and we'll begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Thank you. A roll call, please.
Councilmember Barbeau.
Here.
Councilmember Moreno.
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Next item is the approval of the agenda, and with that, we are waiving the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes, if that's
move
applicable.
Move approval of the agenda.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Barbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie? Yes. Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And it's a great privilege to recognize some employees this evening, and I'm going to ask our city manager to begin the program.
Thank you, Mayor. And if I could have all of the employees being recognized tonight come on up. So Lori and Katie and Jeff. And there we go. Come on, Diego. We're going to have you.
Not stand here up. Yet.
Sorry. Okay, it's good. See, he's efficient. He's moving right to the end. We like that.
He heard there was an opening for mayor, and he just moved right on.
Absolutely.
In. All right.
So we're going to start with Katie. Come on up, Katie. So this is Katie Mulder, and she is a zookeeper at the Charles Paddock Zoo, and she's been with the city and the zoo here for 5 years. Yeah, you can come a little closer. I don't bite. There we go. So Katie came to us as a experienced and seasoned zookeeper. She came to us from the Living Desert Zoo in Palm Springs, and she brought with her a wide range of skills and experience with the animal species we now have here at the zoo, and with additional species that we'll be acquiring in the future. So as we can get people with like Katie with their experience come here to the zoo, it's a lot easier to acquire those animals and take care of them because we have that experience and that knowledge. Katie is very knowledgeable and stays up to date on what's going on with animal care at other institutions, as well as with animal populations in the wild. She utilizes this information to help her fellow zoo staff with making critical decisions and in implementing possible changes in animal husbandry. As a zookeeper, Katie is responsible for the care of a wide variety of reptiles, birds, and mammals. She helps with the training of our zoo interns and volunteers, and also assists with the planning and running of zoo events. Katie trains some of the animals for husbandry behaviors, and she collaborates with the zoo vet and vet tech to help diagnose and treat sick and injured birds, mammals, and reptiles. Katie always has a smile on her face, always, except when she's being harassed here next to me. And she has a really bright and sunny outlook. The first comment we often hear about her from volunteers and the public is, she's such a nice, friendly person. Her positive attitude serves us extremely well as she's very engaging with our zoo visitors. When you see Katie, make sure you stop and ask her what's going on at the zoo. You're guaranteed to learn something new every time. I enjoy spending time with Katie and learning so much about the zoo animals. She has a passion for what she does. She gives it her all every day, and I appreciate having her here at the City of Atascadero. So thank you, Katie. Okay, we get to go back. Diego. So this is Diego Segovia. He is a police officer with the Atascadero Police Department for the last 5 years. He's been a police officer since 2013 and is currently assigned to the investigations unit as a streets crime detective, responsible for investigating narcotics and gang activity. He also has recently been assigned general crime investigations to assist with the caseload. After his hire, Diego quickly became the go-to guy whenever anyone was looking for a suspect as part of an ongoing investigation. Diego usually came through and was able to identify or track the suspect down. I know that Chief has bragged about his ability to do that on many occasions. He is also adept at writing search warrants, completing the process quickly and efficiently, and is very proactive while working out in the field. Diego is an extremely dependable employee and is always willing to come in and help if patrol is short-staffed. Through his 5 years of employment with us, he has used a total of only 3 sick days. Dedicated, loyal, hardworking employee. It's a clear reflection to me not only of his general good health, but also of his dedication to the department. I'm told that Diego has a very good sense of humor and creates a fun working environment. He has become the department's resident expert on impersonations. Uh-oh, this is something I did not know.
Oh, no, everyone knows.
Do we get a sample?
Oh, no.
Maybe later. Those later, so. Let's see. And has perfected several impersonations of his coworkers. Uh-oh. And Diego enjoys camping and visiting our local beaches with his wife, Gabby, and their 2 daughters, Pepper and Violet. So thank you, Diego. We appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. So, Ryan. So this is Detective Ryan Sloan, and he joined us here at the Atascadero Police Department 5 years ago after previously serving with the Ridgecrest Police Department. Ryan was a great fit for our organization and quickly became a respected member of the team. You're just worried what I'm going to say at the bottom, right? Chief writes these. I just read them.
I can see him. He's going
to
stand and smile.
That's a smart man. Ryan recently became the department's crimes against person detective, and in that role, he is already performing at an outstanding level. He had previously been assigned to the special enforcement team, where he focused on street crimes and narcotic enforcement within the city. In addition to his regular daily duties, Ryan was one of the department's instructors in the use of less lethal and chemical agents. He was also previously very actively involved in the county SWAT team, where he rose to a leadership position. However, due to Ryan's strong commitment to his new detective position, he recently stepped down from the SWAT team, which will allow him to more fully focus on his detective role. Ryan has been decorated several times in the past 5 years. Just last week, he was selected by the San Luis Obispo chapter of the International Footprint Association for the Department's Footprinters Award. Ryan has also been awarded the Atascadero Police Department's Chief of Police Commendation and was publicly recognized here for his assistance in rescuing a subject from a residential structure fire. In addition, he's been awarded the San Luis Obispo Sheriff's Department Distinguished Service Award for his actions as a SWAT team operator, responding to a barricaded homicide suspect. Ryan and his wife, Teresa, have 2 children, Ada and Gunnar. In his free time, Ryan is an avid San Jose Sharks fan and an accomplished drummer. Didn't know about that. Fantastic. So, Ryan, thank you very much for your service. I appreciate it. Thank you. Officer Hester. All right, now's your turn. I'm sorry. So Christopher Hester has served the city as a police officer for the past 10 years, but he has been around here for a lot longer than that. Chris began his relationship with us as a police explorer and quickly distinguished himself as a leader within the explorer ranks. He has continued to be involved as an explorer advisor throughout his tenure with the department. After his experience as an explorer, Chris was first hired as one of our first police cadets. He learned the roles and responsibilities of a police professional while performing his cadet duties. He did such a great job that the police department decided to sponsor him through the police academy, and we have never regretted that decision. Chris has been a great hire. So Chris has become an outstanding police officer and has been one of our more proactive police officers during the past 10 years. He is well-liked by both his peers and supervisors. Not long ago, while recovering from an injury, Chris took a greater number of police reports than any other member of the police department, which is another example of his commitment to hard work. Chris's overriding passion is with the police canine program. I'm sure all of you guys have seen him at various demonstrations and fundraisers, education, getting out there and talking. He is a canine handler, and together with his canine partner, Luke, Chris has been able to capture several suspects who may have escaped if not for their cohesive teamwork. He has been actively involved in fundraising efforts for the canine program, reaching out to the community to show how important the canine program is to the success of the department. During his time off, Chris enjoys spending it with his girlfriend Tara and her son Wyatt, and I hear that one of Wyatt's favorite places is Disneyland. It could be that Disneyland is really Chris's favorite place too. So we appreciate Chris and all he does for the department day in and day out, so thank you very much. You knew, you're next.
We did.
This is our newly lieutenant, Jason Carr. He's been with our police department for 15 years, but he was just recently appointed to the lieutenant position, and we're very excited to have him in that role. So Jason began his employment with the Atascadero Police Department 15 years ago as a police officer, and has also served the department as a police detective, a member of the county SWAT team, a field training officer, and as a motorcycle police officer. In fact, Jason still enjoys riding a police motorcycle when he can and was recently spotted training with our newest motor officer. During the course of his tenure here at the city, Jason was promoted to the rank of corporal and then to sergeant. As sergeant, he was assigned to the position of detective sergeant and served as the investigation supervisor and as the administrative sergeant. He excelled in both of those roles. During this time, Jason graduated from the Post-Supervisory Leadership Institute. After a recent and very competitive internal recruitment process, Jason was promoted to police lieutenant and has already demonstrated his leadership qualities in that role. One of the most recent projects he's undertaken has been the creation of a recruitment video for the police department. The video is very popular and is already proving to be a success. We did receive an application that they said, why, you know, where did you hear about this? It was the police video, recruitment video that these guys just did. Over the course of the past 15 years, the department and the city have benefited from Jason's team spirit and consummate professionalism. He is very well liked by the members of the community he serves and is a respected leader in the police department. Jason comes from a family of police professionals, which includes his father and brother. He and his wife, Audra, have two boys, Brady and Logan, and Jason enjoys spending time with his boys, working on their two-acre property, or engaging in sports activity. So thank you, Jason, for everything you do.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Sergeant Wilshusen has been here with us for 20 years. Jeff Wilshusen has been an employee of the Atascadero Police Department for 20 years now, and he is a tremendous representative of the department's mission, serving our community with distinction. During his time with the department, Jeff has been assigned as a field training officer, a member of the county SWAT team, and as a detective. Jeff has excelled in each of those roles. He has demonstrated his leadership abilities while serving as corporal and now as a police sergeant. Jeff is currently assigned as the Detective Bureau Supervisor, where he leads his team with enthusiasm. He is a well-trained officer and has graduated from the Post-Supervisory Leadership Institute. Jeff is known for being a positive, upbeat member of the department and is rarely seen without a smile. He did good. He works hard to ensure that he and fellow staff members stay motivated. Jeff is also very active in our community and currently serves on the board for the Transitional Food and Shelter Organization, which works to provide services to members of our community who find themselves in need. He is truly reflective of the department value in being in partnership with our community. Sergeant Wilson and his wife, Rochelle, have four children, Kaylee, Macy, Allie, and Casey. He is a dedicated father who previously spent lots of time coaching youth sports. And now that their kids are getting older, Jeff and Rochelle enjoy spending time together, traveling both abroad and right here on the Central Coast in their motorhome. Thank you, Jeff, for your 20 years of service to our community.
Thank you, Jeff.
This is Lori Bricky. Lori is one of the first people I hired when I got here to the city, and boy, was it a good hire. So Lori Bricky is a finance technician, and it's hard to believe, but Lori is celebrating her 20-year anniversary in the city's finance department. Throughout the past 20 years, Lori has been truly a vital and essential member of the city's finance team. She processes all of the city's accounts payable invoices and purchase orders, helping to keep our vendors happy by using her terrific organizational skills and exceptionally fast keystrokes to accurately process about 400 invoices every 2 weeks. And when I talk organizational skills, we're talking organizational skills. There's not a thing out of place on Lori's desk. She has superb customer service skills when answering all invoice-related questions. You'll often find Lori reviewing our vendor contracts to ensure all paperwork is in order, that all of our requirements are met, and are in compliance with the city's purchasing policy. She processes about 100 purchase orders each year. Lori coordinates the city's cell phone purchases and contracts and maintains the city's fuel card program. She prepares annual reports to state and federal agencies, performs reconciliations, and plays a key role in the annual financial statement preparation and audit process, the development of the city's two-year budget, and other necessary finance projects. Lori serves on our Employee Development Advisory Committee and helps them to come up with ideas for great new and fun staff activities. In 2009, along with a team from the city, she attended the Emergency Management Institute in Maryland to learn how the city can respond most efficiently in emergencies. Lori is a highly organized and dedicated team player with an extremely strong work ethic and is someone who is very highly regarded by every other staff member in the city. Day in and day out, she continuously demonstrates her commitment to get the job done extraordinarily well and on time, and she is just plain terrific to work with. She's a dedicated team player and takes pride in her work, and we're proud to have her as a member of our team. She's also incredibly nice and just a true pleasure to work with. So thank you, Lori. Okay, now if we can get all the employees to come up front with the city council for a photo, if we could.
Now Chris.
There he is. Thank you.
You know, I think we do have time to see Diego's impersonation of the police chief. I hear it is outstanding. And since you're at the end of the line, I think we have plenty of time if you'd like to do that on live TV.
Or I thought maybe you had one of the mayor.
Yeah. No, I've seen the chief imitate me. I'm not going to... No, the council is very proud of all of our employees. We know they're extremely dedicated. We know they put in a lot more time than most folks. I'd like to comment on every one of them. We don't have the time, but it's true. Lori Bricky is probably the nicest person in the world and does work very hard. And the council has personally witnessed most of these employees in action in the community and really interacting with the public and representing us well, and we do appreciate their work. The next item on our agenda is the consent calendar, which is made up of items considered to be routine and can be voted on in a group and should not involve a lot of discussion unless any member of the council would like to talk about an item more or any of you. So with that, I would ask if there's any council member wishing to pull a consent calendar item. And seeing none, I'll ask the public if they'd like to have more discussion on any consent calendar item. And seeing no interest, we can entertain a motion on all items.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
I have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau.
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Next, updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. Chief, can I have you get the clicker? The first item I want to talk about, and please forgive me that I will mispronounce this, but I pronounce it faux for you, but it's actually fa for you, or something similar, is now open. We've all been waiting here at City Hall with bated breath for this to open as they've been going through the tenant improvements and stuff. To get that open, I hear it that it is extremely good. It is a new Vietnamese noodle soup restaurant. It's now open at 5985 Entrada Avenue, and they are open every day from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Sunday, and I have heard nothing but excellent reviews from it. We also have residential cleanup day coming. So residents can drop off certain types of residential garbage on Saturday, October 27th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. over at the city yard at 8005 Garbata, which is off Kerberil near the railroad tracks. This event is only for Atascadero residents. And for more information, you can call Waste Alternatives at 805-466-3636. So you can drop off your residential garbage there at the courtyard on October 27th. We have Zubu coming up. So just a reminder before I talk about Zubu, the zoo is closed through Thursday of this week. As we do maintenance, we're repaving all the walkways and giving them all an asphalt overlay, getting them to be ADA compliant, getting rid of tree roots and other tripping hazards. So that's pretty exciting. We've been looking forward to doing this for some time. But this Saturday, just in time to enjoy those new walkways, everyone can bring their kids to a spectacular but not too scary evening at the Charles Paddock Zoo from 5 to 8:30 p.m. this October 27th. There will be a costume contest, carnivals, games, a haunted house, plus tricks and treats for everyone to enjoy. It's a fun event. The kids love it. Get lots of little prizes and other things, along with a bag from our sponsor, Pediatric Pure Dentistry. And speaking of Halloween, we have next week's Farmers Market on Halloween, Wednesday, October 31st. We'll be extra festive. Bring the kids to Farmers Market between 3 to 5 p.m. dressed in their best Halloween costume to get a special treat from our local farmers. And then after the Farmers Market, everyone can go to Entrada for a safe trick-or-treat on Entrada. That event will be held next Wednesday, Halloween evening, from 5 to 7 p.m. This year, there will be over 30 businesses and nonprofit groups participating. There will be a haze mage, the vintage fire truck, a cakewalk, ghost stories of Atascadero's past, lots of great music, plenty of trick-or-treating, and, of course, the children's and pet costume contest, always a favorite. Entrada will be closed on Halloween beginning at 4 p.m. for the festivities. So a lot of stuff coming up. October 27th on Saturday, Zoo Boo that evening, the Farmers Market on Wednesday, and then a safe trick-or-treat on Entrada on Wednesday evening. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any council questions? You didn't mention the outstanding array of judges you're going to have for this competition.
We are. I didn't want to put you in too tough of a bind because it's a tough judging thing. There are a lot of really creative costumes and really cute kids, so I don't envy you your job.
It should be fun.
It
Look
will
forward
be.
To it. Seeing no other questions on the... We will move on to the community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on anything that's not on the agenda that is still within our jurisdiction. So welcome. Just please state your name for the record.
Good evening. Susan Warren, 8600 Tascadero Avenue. And I'm here on a little bit of a repeat because I was here I think two council meetings ago, and Heather was on vacation, and I think Rochelle was too. So I'm here tonight to give them both a copy of the book, The American Fix by Ryan Hampton. As I explained to the council members before, this is a very passionate overview of the opioid epidemic, how we got here, the history. And his own personal journey is interspersed through here and how he learned and looked at all the treatment, residential, sober living, what was available for people when they started asking for help. And he's come up with a lot of ideas. I will say the health commissioners, I'm on the health commission, said, "Oh my gosh, that was very poorly written. There were a lot of run-on sentences." And I said, "Well, yes, but you have to agree, he's very, very passionate about the subject. And tell me that you learned something, you know." And he did. His concern was, I'm not too sure that he wasn't real specific about some of the changes that need to happen and where we can go forward. Well, I beg to differ because I did bring it up in that even though this book only came out the end of August, he has already been to Congress and had it passed in both houses to have basic standards across the country. They can only encourage the states to adopt these standards, but they are through the National Association of Recovery Residences. They have done a terrific job of wanting to be good community members and setting up standards for how sober living houses should be run and how the peer support staff and everyone needs to be certified and trained so that we are some of the best neighbors you have in the community. And not only did that get passed in both houses in Congress, it went to the president, it has been signed into law. So this will be happening whether or not our state chooses to participate. I hope it will, because the standards they have right now are fairly weak as compared to these other standards. So I think there's a good push to see that happen. In the meantime, and I'm sorry I didn't bring enough copies, but I will email these to you. We had a presentation at the Health Commission just recently on a grant, 3-year grant project, and this was the final report on integrating behavioral health and primary care services in SLO County. And I'll get this out to all of you this week, because you will find in here that in spite of the work they did in 3 years and knowing some of the specific issues, particularly educating primary care physicians, that the folks that they interviewed pre and post, the consumers of these services, still felt the same problems were still there. Long wait times, not enough doctors, stigma within from the physicians, and some of the other issues. So these are a lot of the things that Ryan has addressed in here. And we have a lot of work to do in our county. But getting on the same page is really the first step. So
thank you, Susan. Uh-huh. And thank you for your service in our community. We have a great program right here in town. And I have invited the new health agency officer to speak at our countywide mayor's meeting. I'll be hosting right here in City Hall coming up. And that's one of our topics, is to kind of see what is the direction of services changing with a little more emphasis on mental health and substance abuse treatment. I'm glad to see you're on the health agency advisory board. That's a good spot for you to be. So again, thank you for your service. Any other member of the public wishing to speak? Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Mark Russo. I'm a longtime resident here in Tascadero. And as a lot of you know, I do a Halloween spooktacular every year. This is the third year, and has grown exponentially. And I owe that to the community who has helped me reach out and get the word out. And first off, as the city of Tascadero, thank you very much for getting the word out. Without the support of the folks around me, Halloween spirit in my neighborhood probably fizzled down. Since I've started this thing, I'm starting to see decorations on our doors, our neighbors, and it's pretty cool. So it's starting to really grow. And it brings the kid out of all of us. And I guess I'm a kid all year round, but it's pretty cool. And I want to make sure I also thank and Tascadero Daily News. They put out a really special for it, and it was really cool. KSBY News actually put out a spot out there too, and I want to thank all my friends on the streets, in social media, who helped me also get the word out, because I'm hearing it from everywhere, and it's pretty cool. We just don't want the Halloween spirit to fade away. City of Tascadero does a great job here in Entrada. I used to be part of that, and it's full. There's still time to go to that end to the spooktacular on Cortez Avenue next to the Jim Green Trail. So we can do it all the same night. It's kind of geared towards younger groups, and I just want to see as many trick-or-treaters as possible. And I have truckloads of candy. Last year we had about 70 trick-or-treaters, probably a total of 300 people came by, and I still had candy left, and I didn't throw any of it away. So let's not do the same thing this year, folks. So anyways, thank you, guys. Thank you, Rochelle. Thanks, Terry. She's not here. She helped get the word out. And I just really appreciate it. So come on down. Halloween spectacular at the Russo's.
Well, we've all seen the trucks you drive. So if you say you've got some truckloads of candy, that's some serious sugar rush. And it's true, farmers market 3 to 5 and Entrada 5 to 7, but you're going to be open later. You could kind of come by any time in there, and that would be a great ending to the evening right out there on Cortez Avenue. Thank you. Anyone else wanting to speak on public forum? Seeing none, we'll close the community forum and bring it back to council. We do not have any public hearings, and our first management report is procurement for Joy Playground equipment at Colony Park. I remember a few years back when a group of moms came here and telling us about a vision that they had. And our own Mark Derez here is an architect, part of Kiwanis. We'll hear more about Kiwanis later. I kind of volunteered some time to kind of help get that planned along. And, you know, they did a lot of cookie sales, did a lot of things. Our own Jeff Oslin also in Kiwanis kind of took the lead there of kind of taking up a notch or two on fundraising. I see we have one of our Parks and Recreation Commissioners here, Heather Newsom. Thank you for also a Kiwanian working on this. And I remember when we did that first check for $50,000 and then a later $30,000 check. But here, we're here tonight to talk about the city's $536 and $709 check, which we're very pleased to be participating with. So I'm going to go ahead and ask staff to give us a little outline of where we are and where we're going from here as well.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Little background on this, and it has a long history of background, almost dating 5 years now, over 5 years. But as the mayor indicated, back in May 2013, a group of local residents came to the city council meeting during public comment and talked about the need for an all-inclusive special needs playground in town. That started this private-public partnership with the city and Parents for Joy. They identified Colony Park as the most ideal location to site this playground. And as part of that, they needed to change the Colony Park master plan. So the council amended that plan in February 2014. And then they talked to three different playground manufacturers about designs and concepts and gave them kind of a vision of what they were looking for. And they selected Game Time based on scoring a set of criteria of the playground manufacturers. Really, and the emphasis was allowing this, you know, having the playground designed for the needs of special needs kids, while allowing them to play with the other children with non-disabilities. The conceptual plans were further developed and then recommended by Park and Rec Commission in July 2014 and ultimately approved by City Council in October 2014. So that's a little bit how they got to the conceptual plans, and then it was a matter of funding the project. This playground is probably upwards of $700,000, and so there's a lot of costs there. The Parents for Joy were very active in fundraising activities, really having contractor socials, you know, where they could really present the vision of this playground and get not only monetary fundraising, but also working with local contractors and vendors to, you know, provide, you know, materials and work in kind for the playground. And the city actually, through a housing related parks grant in last year in February that the community development team put together, identified Joy Playground as a potential grant recipient. They listed, you know, $505,000 of this grant that we expected about $700,000 to come in, with the other money going to Lake Park improvements. The HRP grant was actually, it was the last year they had it, so they didn't have enough to fund what we could have gotten. So every city that applied got a prorated share of that funding. And so it was less than that, but the city wanted to still make that funding commitment to Parents for Joy towards a Joy Playground. So they decided to, the council authorized $505,000 last November in Parkland facilities fees to go towards a project. This kind of had less strings attached than the housing-related park grant. So it really got this thing going, and a groundbreaking occurred on May 1st of this year. There hasn't been a lot of activity happening out there. We actually, there has been actually a lot of activity happening, but not a lot of visual progress happening on the site. We actually had to relocate a electrical line with PG&E. And then we decided that there was a better option for the site where there wasn't as much excavation needed. So it was kind of redesigned the site slightly to accommodate that. But the playground and the conceptual plans remain the same. And I know Mr. Oslin and his team are hard at work out there now. It's a little breakdown for the game time proposal. They provided cost to furnish the playground equipment at a little over $309,000. This also included over $100,000 grant that they gave to the city. So this is actually the playground equipment is upwards of over $400,000. And then $95,700 to install the equipment. And then also as part of this, the entire surfacing is going to be much like what we did at Lake Park, that rubberized poured-in-place surfacing. And that came in at $131,859, so a total of $536,710. Parents for Joy is committed to make up that difference between that amount and the $505,000, so they will be providing the city for a check in the amount of $31,710 prior to us issuing the purchase order. So I want to kind of go through the conceptual plans. This is a site currently. The playground's actually going to be sited behind the community center near the parking lot. In this picture, actually, it's kind of on the middle right side of the parking lot going in is actually... I think I grabbed this picture in haste. I'm going to skip that slide and just go on to the conceptual plans. I should have just made something up. And made, what are you talking about? Sorry about that. One of the last minute slides I threw in there. So this is kind of the site layout. But essentially, when you drive into the community center and go out of the way to the back, is going to be located to your left behind the community center building. So this is a site plan. You can see on the right side are the swings. There's kind of like a cool little like creek-like surfacing going through there. And then the play structures. And this playground is really designed for the youth ages 5 to 12. So there's no toddler pieces in here. It's primarily for the majority of the youth kids. This is, again, just a site plan showing the fall protection that went into the analysis that Game Time did. So here's kind of the main structure, and you can see this is a new site plan that raised, it used to be lowered and it was tiered, and this saves a lot of money, actually, with construction of the site. But there'll be a ramp, you know, to allow kids to get down in there. There's also steps. The swings are in the back side of the property, and then they've got other, kind of the rocking playground pieces in the middle there. It's going to be actually pretty striking. I mean, the Lake Park, if any of you have been out to the Lake Park, and I swear every time I go out there, there's just so many kids playing on that new playground. It's so popular. And I think this is going to be super popular, too. Actually, the Tribune, or there was an article in there a couple weeks ago that talked about Tascadero Lake Park being one of the best playgrounds in the county now. So it was kind of cool. But you can see some of these structures. Really, a lot of slides, they're shade structures. Really, this piece in the middle is an oak tree. Does resemble an oak tree. That's really the signature piece in the whole playground. And that was one of the key things that, you know, the conceptual plans wanted and the design wanted to incorporate is kind of that oak forest, so to speak, in Atascadero. Just a couple other views, a lot of slides, a lot of logs and other things to climb on, the lily pad steppers to get up. So really a lot of the same details that, you know, some of the same details that the Lake Park playground had, but just more, you know, more ramps and bridges and other things. It's another view of the swing. So there's going to be some of those universal swings where, you know, adults can swing and face their children. And, yeah, just a lot of cool stuff. I mean, it's going to be striking out there for sure. So the recommendations tonight is to award contract to Playcore Wisconsin, and they're doing business as Game Time, and the amount of $536,710. Then authorize the city manager to execute that contract with Playcore Wisconsin. There was a typo I noticed in the staff report on that number two. I had the wrong number in there, so it's actually $536,710. And then authorize the Director of Public Works to file a notice of completion upon satisfactory completion of the project. So with that, I can take any questions, and I'm sure Chief Haley, who kind of kicked this thing off initially, can probably answer any questions you have as well.
Any council questions? Go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering when we're going to see this park finished.
Oh, very good. I was going to mention that. So the deadline, talking with Parents for Joy, the drop deadline is May 1st of next year. We want to get that done. We want to get it done sooner. One of the things we're going to be running into a little bit with construction, the only thing that the weather might hold up is that poured-in-place rubberized surfacing that needs to occur between certain temperatures, usually warmer temperatures. So there are maybe, we'll talk to Game Time about, you know, potentially tenting it, heating it if need be, if that's something that they're willing to do. But really the drop deadline is May 1st, 2017, Ms. Roslin, or sorry, 2019.
Very good. Thank you.
Other council questions? Yes, Councilmember Perpo.
Yes, this contract is for the equipment and the installation of the playground equipment, but the site preparation and all that is being done and handled by Parents for Joy, correct?
Correct.
And so that all has to happen before the equipment can be installed.
Correct. So they're doing a lot of that site work, as you see in this, let me back up here. This kind of shows it maybe the best, but a lot of the concrete work, you know, the ramps, the steps, the grading, storm drains, things like that.
Right, and I understand. I mean, they've done such a great job, but they're getting a lot of contributions in kind in terms of labor. But maybe we'll have Jeff Oslin up can answer a couple questions as well.
Sure.
Let's go ahead with council questions. Any other council questions? Seeing none, we'll open it up to the public, and I would invite Mr. Oslin up, who's been a leader along with Kiwanis on this project over time. What can you tell us? But thank you for my birthday present.
Yeah, you'll have a nice birthday present for your granddaughter, being it's called the Joy Playground. So, anyways, I'm Jeff Oslin, Glenn's Repair, Vino Vice Security, part of Parents for Joy. We are making forward progress again. We're starting again next week on the preparation for the ground to get back on. We figure we'll be hopefully without any other major hiccups about 6 weeks out from the infrastructure being complete so the playground equipment can get installed. Home Depot has made a commitment to provide the fencing, with Kiwanis and Rotary doing the labor alongside of Home Depot, so that's saving us about $30,000. So we're about $90,000 away from fully funding everything that we're doing. So basically we have a bridge loan in place to finish up. That's where we're at there. City manager will have the check from our bank account tomorrow. It's being couriered to Atascadero so that they can purchase the playground equipment. As Nick said, the biggest issue is the pour and play and the temperature to make sure that it cures, and you can't have nights under 50, and we're already there. So we're looking at planning. Plan Bs and trying to get a tent company to donate a tent and heat it so we can get it done. We've said all along that we would open May 1st of 2019. If we're able to do it before that, we would love to. But you always add extra time in case of delays, which we hit one that we didn't expect. Too much infrastructure underneath, so we're going at ground level, which is awesome. And some of the things that, just to remind you, yes, it's a playground for children, but the beauty of this is if you're somebody, and I'll pick on Mark for a minute, in a wheelchair or a veteran that has some type of disability, because it's all pour and play and even in 100% ADA for everything, that you can get to your child if they fall, where you can't do that necessarily in other playgrounds. So this is a huge benefit for the North County and our city. So that's kind of where we're at. The other thing that we are saying at this juncture is the February Chamber Mixer will be held at the Colony Playground, or the Joy Playground slash the Community Center. And we're going to call that a preview. And we're going to definitely be asking for more checks as people preview the park. But that's a good mixer that we're up to. So hopefully I answered your questions.
Very good. And we did acknowledge Rotary as well and Home Depot. Are there other significant contributors? Because you've been really out there shaking the money trees.
Yeah. Well, the latest one would have to be the Atascadero State Hospital. They made a three-year commitment to us for their golf tournament. We got involved in it kind of late this year. We only made about $6,000 off of their tournament. We've already set the date for next year. It will be September 28th. It's going to be at Avila once again. But now that we have a year to run on it and we've already been through one, we're hoping to raise another $15,000, $20,000. We do have a couple other major donors that we're talking to. Don't want to make them public yet, but we're making major headway. And, of course, the 505 from the city of Atascadero is really a huge boost. It's more of a million-dollar project in reality, not less. It started out a lot less, but the playground equipment, the labor cost, the pour and play, the contractors, everything has gone up. And, of course, when we had to pull the plug on the excavating, we went back to the drawing board. So that costs us a little bit. So we do have some cost savings, but we do have some added expenses. So we had to pay engineering again, re-engineer the park. City of Tasker has been fantastic at reviewing the plans and getting back to us within about 72 hours of saying, yep, we're good to go. We made some minor design changes also on the fencing. So we're making major headway. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Kiwanis, of course, at, you know, 30, they just gave us another $5,000. Rabobank gave us another $2,000. So the community is really getting behind this, and, you know, those nickel and dimes really add up.
And I also appreciate Parents for Joy and your vision that we're not aiming just for the completion of this park. You're looking at getting a fund that would help continue to maintain this at a level that it needs to be maintained for this kind of access. So I think that's very commendable. That's not something people usually think of. And I think having that kind of a fund ensures this will have many, many years of useful service. So thank you for your effort on this.
Yeah, we made that commitment to you, and we're going to stand behind that commitment to the city that you will have a maintenance fund. Some of the design changes in the fencing is we're like putting a 6-foot gate in that can open up, so if we have to take playground equipment in or out in the future, we can get to it without a crane. The only major design change in the playground equipment is we shaved off 4 inches of the height of the big treehouse to accommodate all the ADA ramps.
Very good. Thank you. I don't think we have any other council questions. We'll open it up. Did Councilmember Perpo, did you have any other specific questions?
Well, Jeff, I understand you also had or have contractors who will be contributing labor in kind for various parts of the project.
We have a lot of contractors that are donating to us. Faravani is committed to do most of the trucking for us. which is a nice fit because they're paving some of our roads right now. Viola is doing the major work in the construction. They've given it to us at a great discounted rate. So the more we can have donated, the more that we can have discounted, helps get the project done and keeps us out of debt, and we'll be in the black hopefully within a year.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other council questions, we'll thank you and open it up to any other members of the public wishing to comment on this item. Seeing no one approach, we'll close the public comment portion, bring it back to the council, and if there's no further discussion, I would move that we adopt staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
And we have a motion by Mayor O'Malley, seconded by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau.
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And thank you for that presentation. Next item on the agenda is the Del Rio Road Commercial Area Specific Plan Potential Land Uses. Lots of study has gone into this, and I believe our Community Development Director, Mr. Phil Dunsmore, will be making the presentation.
Yes, and thank you, Mayor, and good evening, Council. I've been wanting to pick up this discussion again for quite some time. I know we had a lot of discussion on this over the past few months. We've also really delved into this in our strategic planning, looking for ways to really facilitate this specific plan moving forward. And now a number of events have come up, not only a change in land use trends, but other issues that really bring this to the surface to be a really perfect time to have this discussion. What I see this tonight as going forward is really part of a three-part discussion that we need to continue having. This first part tonight are really what are the current development trends. We'd also like to come back to you in a few weeks in November to really talk about how do those current development trends impact traffic at 101 and El Camino Real and Del Rio Road. And then lastly, the third part of that is how should we amend the specific plan and possibly even EIR to respond to these changes that are happening right now. But for tonight, we're going to focus on really just that land use trend and just what's happening in the area. I'm going to start by giving you some background on the specific plan, what was approved back in 2012, what those current development trends are, and what we're seeing right now in terms of applications for development around the specific plan area. And then also, I'm going to briefly introduce a whole set of land use scenarios or hypothetical land use scenarios that we're assuming will move forward in the specific plan area in the future. And we use those so that we can estimate traffic in the future. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to get into the details of this traffic a little later on at our next hearing when we have all those numbers. We're still working on a traffic analysis. What you're looking at on the screen really is the zoning map of the property today. And what you're also looking at is a lot of vacant land. And why is that land vacant? And I'm going to sort of delve into that a little bit tonight. It's vacant because we aren't really able to move forward with much development in a specific plan. It's tied up due to pending road improvements and due to the Walmart property. In essence, the Del Rio specific plan was founded on the thought of being 100% retail. That's all of that red area that you see on the map there. If I look at the actual red boundary on this map, that is the Del Rio specific plan. It doesn't include any property on the west side of 101, and it's predominantly on the east side of El Camino Real at Del Rio. It was really anchored by the Walmart project, which was about 120,000 square feet of large retail. But it was that anchor of that Walmart that really drew in the interest of other retail uses in that area, including the property just to the north on the other side of Del Rio, which is known as the Annex property. That's about a 10-acre site. It also was envisioned to have retail, and there was other retail uses around the Walmart site itself as well. all of this within the specific plan. This was all approved in 2012. And now, moving forward, the very first project that we've seen in the specific plan is actually not retail at all. It's a hotel, 120-room hotel, that actually replaced a pretty substantial amount of retail that we had envisioned in the specific plan. And now, as you know, the Walmart project is not a current project, and the property is actually on the market. And we'll talk a little further about that in detail as well. But what's most important is how things were to move forward in terms of the road improvements and what could go first and how things could develop out. The Walmart site, because of the way the specific plan was written and the way the environmental impact report was written, was responsible for building the roundabout. And I'll highlight that a little bit in blue. And that's the roundabout at Del Rio and El Camino Real. That was essentially their only traffic improvement, in addition to some signal improvements and some widening of Del Rio. They were responsible for that prior to opening their store. But no other development in the entire specific plan could move forward until the rest of that project, the entire overpass improvements, which include two other roundabouts that I've highlighted in red there, were completed. So without the Walmart site moving forward and doing that roundabout, essentially everything else in the specific plan is locked up. So that's where we are today. Without that Walmart site moving forward, without that roundabout being built, the other development can't move forward because the other development can't be built. So we're sort of stuck in this loop, and that's a discussion that we've had for quite some months now. How do we move forward? How do we get ourselves to progress forward? And especially since conditions and land uses and things are changing. So really, in some sense, we use our crystal ball. What will the future bring? What's coming? What's going on next? And it's not just magical crystal ball and thinking, oh, let's just kind of throw out some ideas. We don't do this in a vacuum. We do this by bringing in all the property owners that have interests in the area and looking at the development that's happening here in Atascadero, in addition to all of our state and the region and what the trends are. In fact, some of the property owners might be here tonight, at least one of them in the area, others may show up a little later tonight. I know there was a lot of other commitments, but what I want to talk about is the entire land use shift. Traditional retail's changing. We all know that. We've talked about that before. You see the Sears and the Kmarts and even the Walmarts and these other stores that are just changing their format. I mean, most people really are buying their things online unless the location they want to go to is a destination for other activities. So instead, we're seeing trends that support lodging. We're seeing trends that support the service industry, business park and jobs, and other tourist-serving experiences. The new retail reality, as I'll call it, is really based on the experience. Why drive down to the store when I can just buy that online for the general little things that we buy? But we still want to go out to socialize and have an experience and stay somewhere and go out to dinner and go out to lunch. And we have to go, you know, to get service done on our vehicles and other things. But people like to do everything at once. They want an experience, and they want a place to go to where they feel it's a whole thing. And this is just, you know, one example. This may not be something that could happen here in town, but this is a particular shopping center down in the San Fernando Valley. This is where retail is going. People want the dining outside, things to look at, things to do, and that's the only time that retail really effectively works. Other things that work are business park. This is the new business park model. This is the new industrial warehouse model. It also includes places where people want to go. People might come here to work during the day, and they're manufacturing products. There's high-end jobs, but at the same time, it's also a transition to activity centers and concert venues and restaurants and things to do. These things are really popular. So this is also a trend in land use, and that's Tin City and Paso Robles. So we're seeing the first things in the specific plan being lodging uses. We now have the new hotel that's currently under construction in a space that was once retail. We do have an application in right now for a fuel station, a cafe and deli adjacent to that hotel, really modern sort of installation with electric vehicle charging stations and a car wash and a little restaurant, really nice. We do also have a proposal that's going to come forward with two new restaurants at the corner of Del Rio and El Camino Real, just outside the specific plan, but still in that general vicinity. And then there's a tiny home lodging motel proposed at Del Rio on the west side of the highway as well. And again, tapping into that place and that tourism trend, something different than retail. Also, the property owner for the rest of the annex on the north, call it northeast corner of Del Rio and El Camino Real, is now contemplating business park uses, different uses. He's tried repeatedly to get retail. It's just not happening. It's not there. The users aren't there for that. And then lastly, the property on the other side of the freeway, we've called it the church property. It's been owned by a church for some time. It includes 10 acres and possibly some other properties, is now under contract to sell. And we believe they want to do visitor-serving uses and destination-type uses as well. So back to the Walmart site. What's the status of that big vacant property? And their ownership, by the way, includes 26 acres. It's a huge site. Part of that was a Walmart. Part of it actually was set up for multifamily housing. Part of it was set up for two other commercial retail pads. It is now officially on the market. They're quietly putting that on the market. I did speak with their brokers. It's very likely that that site would be sold with a deed restriction. And I don't know... Well, basically, what a deed restriction means is that they would limit things that compete with their Walmart format. That means a large grocery store, a large retail store. They would only sell if that buyer promised to not build something along those lines for the next 25 years. That piece of information alone tells us that development's probably going to go a different way in the Del Rio specific plan. But even if that deed restriction wasn't there, the demand for that kind of a format of store isn't really there for a standalone big box store with a big parking lot. The trends are something different, more of a collection, more of a place to visit, something else. So with all that, knowing what's coming down the pipeline right now, what we have in applications, what we see as regional land use trends, what we see as local land use trends, what we see in terms of the pattern of what Walmart's doing with their property tells us, all right, it's time to create a set of land uses we think are going to happen there. And we did seven of them, seven different scenarios that include some even retail, such as grocery stores, but primarily the lodging uses and the business park uses. Different amounts, both within the specific plan and even outside the specific plan in that area that's impacted by the traffic on both sides of the freeway, on Del Rio and on El Camino Real. And what we've done is we did consult with a traffic engineer. A traffic engineer that's done a lot of work. In fact, this is the same traffic engineer that did a lot of the original Walmart work over there in the first place. We consulted with them and asked them to look at these land use scenarios, and they're currently doing that. And that's the detailed information we'd like to bring back to you later in November and talk about, you know, what their analysis came up with. And what that can do is help us determine the timing of the road improvements, what we really need to do, and what can move forward today so we can release these other property owners just to move forward without waiting for this massive improvement of the Del Rio overpass. That's the hope. Because here's the land today. It's essentially a blank slate, and it's our largest commercial opportunity in the city. When you take the 26 acres of the Walmart site, you take the 13 acres of the annex site, and then you start looking at the west side of 101, there's about 15 more acres that could be developed if we amend the general plan to go in a commercial direction. So the reality here is the biggest issue and the reason that we've had such a struggle with traffic and these discussions is if you look at the map, it's that tiny gap in between El Camino Real and Highway 101. Because you've got these off-ramps that get off the freeway there, and you've got a very small distance to the traffic light at El Camino, the biggest concern here is really the more you do on the east side of El Camino Real, the more that traffic backs up at that traffic light and then potentially backs up onto the 101. That is the whole reason for all of this discussion, and it's why Caltrans really wanted us to build those improvements before we developed out this whole area. But again, that was only under a full retail scenario, and Walmart was really driving that significant impact because of their peak trips on a Saturday when everyone goes shopping, and that was in combination with all of the other retail being built at the same time. So with a different set of land uses, we believe we might be somewhere different. Not needing to do all that, but possibly looking at some interim mitigations that get us there. So what are the next steps? We want to return with details on how the various development scenarios would result in the traffic impacts on that little segment of Del Rio between 101 and El Camino and on the on-off ramps on both sides. We want to look at all that and how each of these hypothetical development scenarios play out with that. And then what we can do is determine the need. Should we stick with the current plan? The current approved plan is doing the three roundabouts. Will we need it now? Will we need it in the near future or not? I mean, that's really the question with this big change. And if not, it could be a huge leap forward in saying, all right, we can develop now. We can see some stuff happen over here now. We're already seeing development pressure on that area. So with that, I'd like to open it up to questions at this point and help you decipher. Hopefully I'm trying to make this as clear as possible. I know it is a very detailed sort of discussion, but thank you.
Very good, and a good start. I'm sure we have a lot to say. I'm going to look to the lights. I have a little box up here that each council member has an opportunity to push a button and let me know the order they're asking questions so I can make sure everyone gets a turn. First is Councilwoman Moreno, followed by Councilwoman Fonzie.
Thank you for the report, Phil. Very well done. I wanted to start out, this has come to us quite a lot. We've talked about this a lot over the years. And Rochelle, I'm just wondering, I mean, as a council and staff, we really go the extra mile with public input and that whole process. And maybe you could give a quick overview in terms of what have we done so far with this and what will we be doing going forward to involve the public?
Obviously, there's been a lot of public meetings and public discussions, both about the interchange, the Del Rio specific plan, and the status of Walmart. Since we have heard that Walmart was not coming and was not planning on continuing to build that, we've held several different council meetings where we've talked about different land uses. We've talked about this at strategic planning. And continued to move forward. The idea was to try and understand what would Walmart and those other property owners want to see. That is most likely develop in there. That is starting to firm up a little bit. It's obviously in the planning stages, which is when you have to make those decisions on what's likely to go there. What are the potential things to go there? Tonight was really about trying to educate everybody about the change in land uses. I think we all think, hey, Walmart was there. We're going to get a new big box store. That could happen, and that's still allowed. It's just not very likely in today's retail trend. So tonight was about trying to get the community back up to understand that. The next decision is going to be talking about the interchanges, and with the likely development that we will see there, are we going to have to build those interchange improvements? What do we think is going to go there, and what impacts will that have? Once we do that, we're going to start the CEQA and specific plan process, which has numerous hearings, planning commission level and city council level, to determine how do we amend that specific plan. So we have had, and we will continue to have a lot of public process. This is just kind of a, hey, let's get the community up to speed. Let them understand Walmart owns that property. It is within their sole right to decide whether to sell it or not to sell it. It is their sole right to determine who they sell it to, if they do sell it. And we have seen them sell it with some significant deed restrictions. It's not uncommon for large retailers to acquire land and then just sit on that land and never develop it because it keeps somebody else out. We have indications that Walmart is going to sell, but
we are expecting to have some significant deed restrictions that I think Phil talked about and are certainly talked about in your staff report. No supermarkets, no large box stores, no, discount club stores. There's a long list of things that we've seen in other deed restrictions. So we wanted to try and get the community on board. This is just another step to try and get that transparency. And then, like Director Dunsmore said, we'll have a lot more steps before the council make a decision. It will not be this council, because we still have quite a few more meetings before any specific plan amendments would become before you.
Thank you. Director, I do have a couple of questions in addition. What has been the feedback from the property owners? Is that how we came up with those seven scenarios? What was their feedback or input to that? What is
absolutely. In fact, we ran these potential development scenarios through three of the property owners that are in, or actually two of the property owners that are in the specific plan, and some of the property owners around the area, and they all provided input onto those potential development scenarios. In addition, just to looking at the trends and actually using the actual applications that we have today by plugging those into the scenarios as well. So it's all been reality-based and truth-tested by the folks that are doing the development. Okay. So a lot of thought put into that.
And then one other question, without getting too deep into the weeds, because this is just, as the city manager said, just kind of this first, hey, here's where things are, this first part in the process. The number of trips, we kind of have some numbers right now of those scenarios, and I'm wondering how those compare to the current plan development and what those trips were that required and triggered those three roundabouts. What is the comparison?
That's a really good question. I think we're going to get into a much finer detail of that at our next meeting. But the short answer to that is it's not just about an exact number. It's about, I'll call it, peaks and valleys. There's peaks of traffic demand. In other words, Walmart had a peak on a Saturday at noon, whereas lodging uses and some business park uses might have peaks at 5 p.m. on a weekday at different times. So it's where those peaks coincide. So it's a little more to it. It's not a straight apples-to-apples comparison. It's looking at all those peaks and really understanding what the delay is that causes traffic to back up and sit at an intersection or back up onto the freeway too long. So we'll be bringing you those comparisons and a lot of additional information and numbers, and I'll even make our public works director weigh in on some of those engineering details so we can look at, you know, a good evaluation of what we expected at one time with the Walmart EIR and what we expect now.
Okay. And so, again, this will be a part of the public process, just wanting all of you to know that we'll be going through this quite heavily, and you all get some input, ask questions, and be a part of the process. So thank you, Director.
Thank you. Councilwoman Fonzie, followed by Councilmember Burbeau, and then Councilmember Sturdivant.
Thank you. I'm glad you have the slide up here, because my question was regarding Walmart property, which is actually several parcels. And you mentioned that a portion of the Walmart site was designated for multifamily or residential uses. Is it possible for Walmart to sell off different parcels for residential, and they may not be the ones that we'd like to have? We'd like to have them in commercial, or how could this roll out?
That's a great question, and it probably is possible. The layout that we see with the zoning on the specific plan right now is different than the parcel configuration that's on the ground today. They had filed a map that never got recorded. In fact, they're still on an extension right now that will go till June or July of next year. And if that map doesn't get recorded, those property lines, those potential property lines, go away, and the zoning boundaries that are on the ground in a specific plan won't match the existing property lines. There's nothing that prevents them from individually selling a property, but what the difficulty is, if someone wants to develop a property individually, it still needs to be consistent with the specific plan unless a specific plan were to be modified. So for someone to individually develop a site, it's going to be a challenge, because that site, the layout, is not going to jive with a specific plan. So they're going to have to come in and amend the specific plan in order to proceed with the development. But it's possible they could still sell the properties individually, which could get a bit challenging for us. So,
well, I'm looking down the road and thinking we're going to have some legal issues possibly. Do you foresee that?
It's possible. I hope that's not the case. I hope the property sells as a whole. I hope that at least there's a lot merge or some subdivision work done before that occurs, or that there's a specific plan amendment that gets filed to make that happen.
And looking at the restrictions that they've put on other properties, and this was Walmart-related in our report, they were quite restrictive on not only the big box stores such as Costco, that wouldn't be allowable, for instance, but they were also restrictive regarding alcohol. Did you happen to have any input regarding that? So let's say a microbrewery gets the most of its income from the sale of alcoholic beverages. That's not an allowable use, for instance.
I did notice that in a deed restriction that was done on the example that we had pulled. That's very interesting, and I haven't been able to get any feedback from Walmart Corporate on why that was done. It almost seems like it's philosophical and not really a competition issue, because there was restrictions in there also about other uses that were not related to large retail. So very interesting, and sure, these are all things to be concerned about. And we don't know for sure what kind of deed restriction they would put on this. They may not have all of those details that we saw in that example. They might be something different. And there may have been other reasons for that particular restriction on that particular property.
And I'm wondering, since Walmart has a commercial worldview of the world and the sale of their property, I'm sure, we're rather interested in perhaps a business park as a component. Is that something that would be allowable with Walmart selling this property, or would the zoning not allow that, or the specific plan would not allow it?
It is allowable, and that's what we're really expecting to happen here. And it wouldn't require a change to the zoning per se. It just requires us to look at the CEQA document, the environmental impact report, differently, because it does have different impacts on the traffic and the noise and different things like that. But in terms of a land use, the zoning doesn't have to change to allow that, unless it were some very intensive manufacturing use that falls into more of an industrial category. But the general business park and light manufacturing is an allowed category under that specific plan.
Thank you.
Councilmember Barbeau, followed by Councilmember Sturdivant.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Dunsmore, regarding the church property, what we call the church property on the west side of the freeway, that was not part of the specific plan at all, correct?
That's correct, and nor is it today.
Okay. But it is included in these kind of scenarios you've come up with, or potential scenarios.
Absolutely.
You mentioned, and this particular map doesn't show it, but on this particular map, that large parcel or set of parcels that are kind of brown there, those are currently residential suburban, but that is the area which you see has potential to be rezoned to potentially be commercial?
That's right.
And is that included? Are the uses that you come up with for the church site, do they include?
They include that parcel.
Including that parcel.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the church site potential uses are not just limited to these smaller
No, it includes a much, much larger site. Okay. And we looked at, how could you develop this area, access, parking, setbacks, compatibility with the neighborhood. But, yeah, that site probably has is more conducive to commercial development because of its freeway adjacency, mm-hmm. and it's somewhat flat. Not really conducive to the very low-density residential we see further to the west.
Got it. And there's currently no application to rezone that in process?
There is not. Okay. Like I mentioned, the property is in escrow, and the buyers, their contract essentially spells out that they would like to come to the city to rezone that property. And it may be a potential that we just amend the specific plan to include that property within it. And that's something that we're continuing to look at, but we don't have an application today.
Okay. And speaking of amending the specific plan, as you noted, right now the specific plan, allows for a large retail building, a Walmart, and some other things, and some things on the annex side that would trigger freeway improvements. And you mentioned CEQA, which that process, since shivers down my spine as to how long that can take. But what I'm wondering is, part of your premise here is that some of these uses, these alternative uses, could result in less traffic and potentially not trigger the need for freeway interchange improvements. If the uses, if potential uses, you know, revising a precise plan to allow different potential uses reduces, you know, the amount of trips and the amount of intensity of use, is it automatic that you reopen CEQA and the CEQA document and go through, you know, the entire process, or is there a more abbreviated process for amending something to a less intense use?
Well, in this particular case, we have to go back and open up the environmental document. And the reason for that is because it's locked down now to the fact that it stipulates that the Walmart parcel develops first, and it stipulates a path for the improvements they need to create, and it stipulates that the other properties can't develop until the other interchange is done. So we, at a minimum, have to go in and change that. Under a normal scenario, if we didn't have mitigations like that, you're correct. You could say, hey, the project before us has fewer, lesser impacts than the project that was approved. Therefore, we can just move forward. No CEQA necessary. We simply utilize the EIR language and mitigations and stays the same, and you do an addendum to that environmental document. In this particular case, we are going to have to amend it because we have to pull out those mitigations that triggered that traffic, and we have to specifically say development today is less intensive. The following mitigations are no longer required. Here's why, if we get to that point.
Okay, and the relative to the church site, if that, you know, pass through escrow goes to new owners, they came to the city, said, hey, we want to rezone that property commercial, and here's some possible uses, would they because they're not part of the precise or the specific plan, they would have to go through a whole new CEQA process, is that correct?
That's correct. We could take that existing EIR and amend it to include it, but it all depends on what their plan is. It really comes down to what their submittal is, what kind of noise, air quality impacts, traffic impacts, other environmental impacts it creates. We still have to go through that CEQA environmental checklist and measure it up, so to speak. So that, you know, is still yet to be determined. But in a perfect world, we'd simply redraw the boundary, open up the EIR, include that project in, and say that it creates a similar or lesser impact than the overall project did before.
Okay. And last technical question. You mentioned in one of your slides two restaurants on a corner of Del Rio and El Camino as things somebody's been talking about. To be specific, I believe you mean the northwest corner?
That's correct. Northwest corner of El Camino Real and Del Rio.
And that particular,
and that is outside the specific plan.
Okay, got it. That's what I was going to ask. That is outside the specific plan.
To the boundary. Let me get the boundary back up here somewhere. There it is. So there's our boundary. So that's future highway-oriented retail, and there's a black arrow pointing to it. That's where those restaurant pads would lie. And, yeah, that whole area, including the gas station that we have a use permit application on, is outside of the specific plan.
And being outside of the specific plan,
not subject to the EIR that was created for that specific plan, already zoned retail, already assumed in our general plan to be developed like that, not triggering CEQA. Very interesting scenario.
Okay, and that's kind of what you just answered what my question was, but when we say it's outside the specific plan, except for the freeway on-ramp that cuts across the property.
Yes.
And which would bring an interesting thing if the owners came along and said, I want to build X, but, you know, if we were still in the mode of thinking we're automatically going to have to do these freeway improvements, you'd have to limit them to some degree of their property they can build on, right?
There's no what we call plan line setback. They could actually build that, and we would have to come back in and condemn that property and do something different. Now, fortunately, we have property owners that are working with us and understand what the future improvements might be and understand that they could be condemned out of that, so they're not building within those areas.
I understand. But the good thing is they can, because they're not part of the specific plan area, they can submit a proposal and proceed without regard to the mandates of the specific plan.
Absolutely.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Sturtevant.
Thank you, Mayor. A quick question on the when it comes to the sale of the Walmart property, at what point will there be clarity on the deed restriction or no deed restriction or the extent thereof? In other words, if it's for sale now, at what point can we will we get that information?
We would not know that until they enter a contract with a buyer.
Okay, so there's no way of knowing?
No, in that's really a private between seller and buyer, and maybe some of our realtors on the council could fill us in on that. But really, yeah, it's something okay. that we may not be privy to at all. Yeah, it's property owner and buyer. It's a unique situation.
Okay. And the other question is that now that the hotel project is actually is underway and it's in the zone here, are there how far there is construction going on right now in the Del Rio specific zone? So
the first project, yes,
the very first. But is there a limit as to how much can be completed within this before?
Yes. And so that, in addition to one small restaurant pad, is really it. When that hotel project went through a conditional use permit process about 6 or 8 months ago, a year or so, we did an amendment to the specific plan at that time. We did a traffic analysis at that time and verified that in addition to the Walmart, the hotel would not create significant traffic impacts even without doing all those improvements because it displaced retail and it had a different type of peak demand for its traffic. It didn't cause the queuing that the other projects would have. So therefore, we allowed it to move forward. And we did a CEQA, what we'll call an addendum at that time, to respond to those issues. And so that would be a very similar process that we could do in the future for other development as well.
So at this point in time, though, besides the hotel and the restaurant pads, the rest of the project pretty much locked up unless other steps are taken.
It's stuck until we do some sort of a larger scale amendment to assume different development.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other council questions? It's so bad our city treasurer is actually sneaking out of the building. I'm much more optimistic than that myself. Anyway, I remember when this first came before us, and of course, I think the thought was, you know, had Walmart gone forward, fully built out prior to the recession, it would probably be the newest complex in the county. Probably others would have folded. I think we were estimating maybe $500,000 of income from that project, which would have been nice to have through 10 years of recession, but that didn't happen. Maybe it's just as well, because I remember when the Marriott first came on, one motel, when you have 10% transient occupancy tax instead of 1% sales tax, I think we were looking at maybe $400,000 increase income. So almost one motel is worth a whole retail complex, and it's fewer vehicle miles traveled. It's like you say, you come in, you stay a while, and you leave, versus retail is built on a lot of turnover throughout the day. So less infrastructure costs, and in our case, maybe a little more flexibility. So with two or three more hotels coming online right now, even if we don't do anything else, the revenue picture is a little more optimistic than if we were in a position with a lot of retail. Even our retail is a challenge. But I guess the good news is, from what I see on the diagram, we have more adjacent undeveloped land at probably the lowest cost in the county, undeveloped. Right at a time when there's more outside investors interested in doing something than ever before. I know talking to a number of businesses, it's significant we have the lowest cost water in the county. I remember talking to one business that has basically similar business in most cities in the area. His water bill in Atascadero was $600 a month, San Luis $6,000 a month. That makes a difference. Lowest cost wastewater treatment, and also, any developers in the audience, yes, I'm marketing. I think there's a lot of potential. We've demonstrated leadership in infrastructure, and I think that's something that's what we're tackling right now. There's a need to take the leadership on figuring out the infrastructure, because that's a big cost that has to be borne. Fortunately, the world is moving towards tourism applications, and we are in the middle of 300 wineries in a tourism industry, and Walmart is not in the tourism business. So go ahead, tell us we shouldn't have a big box store since none of those are being built anyway. Not too worried about that, but I think the concern is how do we move? There's a number of projects really chomping at the bit to go forward, and we, fortunately, a number can, which kind of gives us a revenue flow sooner than we would if we had to wait till the whole project gets built out. But it's really kind of a log jam now, it seems like, that until we figure out this infrastructure, you know, we really can't go forward with a big master plan, and we don't know the future of state and federal funding on transportation and road. We may be on our own. I just always assume we're on our own. So that's going to be a challenge for us to look at, you know, funding that infrastructure. But it seems like the developers are coming forward with some less intensive uses on infrastructure that would actually produce an income stream sooner. Like you say, we got some restaurants and hotels, and since they're a lower usage on transportation, you're thinking we can get a number of these approved now, and that kind of gets a revenue stream coming in that we can maybe deal with infrastructure for the next wave. So are you thinking we want to kind of have a master plan where we kind of tell folks, here's where we're going. We have a vision how this could all fit, and then it's going to happen incrementally? Or are you thinking we need to kind of figure out how this is going to happen all at one time? Do you have a feel for that?
Well, I think what we come back with, that when we come back with you next time and really talk about those traffic impacts, it could be all at once or incrementally. And we'll look at various mitigations that could occur along the way to make it all happen. So I think right now I have some preliminary information that we've looked at. We're still working on an analysis, but we probably will have some phasing of how things could work out. But it could all happen at once, and we could still probably have a plan to accommodate it.
Well, another council member question. First, looks like Council Member Burbeau. Any other council questions after that?
Yes, in your staff report, you made mention in terms of the changing retail environment that Sears had declared bankruptcy, and of course they own Kmart. Have you heard anything relative to our Kmart and what the impact of the Sears filing for bankruptcy might have on our Kmart?
Not specifically. However, I was contacted by a realtor agent and a buyer of that property that was interested in purchasing a Kmart property to redevelop it with a whole different format with different users, different things going on. I don't know whether that transaction completed yet or not. I have spoken with him again since then, and he was interested in purchasing that property with the knowledge that Kmart was going to be going away at some point soon. But we don't have any definitive information on what that date is and what's really happening with the current status, but that seems to be the ongoing trend.
All right, thank you.
Other council questions? We'll open up to the public. Anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment on this process, remembering that you don't have to think up every question tonight. We're going to be having this discussion for some time. So please come forward, and it would be good to get any questions on the record because, again, staff will continue to work with consultants to get answers. So if you have a question or you're not sure about something, this is a good time to give us more to probably even answer the question or get an answer for our public. Welcome.
Hi, Susan Funk from Tascadero. So as I'm talking with folks this around the city, the number one thing that people talk with me about what they'd like to see happen since Walmart is not coming, the number one request is Costco. And Costco has been at a number of Chamber of Commerce events. They've had a booth at our colony days, and I've had a couple of conversations with the local people about what kind of numbers they're looking to do to demonstrate enough demand that they could open a North County location. So there is interest sniffing around. I'm interested if, first of all, on the deed restriction, I have heard various folks saying, you know, yes, there would be one. No, there might. No, they're not currently. One is not currently being contemplated. Since Walmart does not have any Sam's Club within a couple-hour radius of here, is there history for Walmart in markets where it's not playing in the big in the warehouse type segment of doing deed restrictions that prevent warehouse type development in the property? So that's one consideration. The other consideration would be what other properties in this space might potentially be large enough to accommodate Costco, so that if they came north, we might not lose them to Paso. And that would be those would be particular considerations as we develop this forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I can remember when I was naive once about big boxes too, had some discussions, and I found that actually talking to local managers of similar stores usually don't have much idea of what the corporate strategy is. And we had opportunity to hear from the corporate strategists over time, and again, their ideas change. But I think we definitely want to be open to whatever possibilities anyone would come forward with. I think we don't want to discourage any potential business, and we certainly recognize we want to love to see more shopping. We had a better range of shopping in E.G. Lewis's day when you could actually have a men's clothing store and a few other things. So I think we all miss that, so if there's a way to work that in too. But I remember when my favorite story I'd hear is people say, O'Malley, why don't you get a Nordstrom's? Why do you want a Walmart? Well, I don't actually go to big boxes. But I said, you know, you don't really want a Nordstrom's because their business model is they want at least 100,000 or more population in a very close concentric circle. So if we approved the population that they wanted in their business plan, we'd all get fired up here anyway. So I think, like you say, you kind of have to be as open and proactive. And I think it's tough when you try to have a public discussion and say, well, we like you and we don't like you. What the business world hears is, we don't like you. And I think we try to be as open as we can. How can we be as proactive, process permits as quick as we can, take care of infrastructure, hold input like this, meet with everyone we can that's in the development community that has an idea, because we are very proactive. So we would welcome anyone that actually has a checkbook with them and has the authority to sign the check. But I don't know if you could add anything to that. I think we have you heard. Has Costco called you?
No, but I have called them.
Yes.
And I have had great conversations.
Yeah.
And
we call everybody we can.
You know, there was a rumor for a long time that they had property in North County somewhere, but Paso, I've verified with Paso, they don't have property there that's owned by Costco or that they're contemplating. They're quite happy with their market down in San Luis Obispo right now. The difficulty is finding a property that's big enough to support them. They need 15 acres or more. Their minimum store size is about 140,000 square feet. Do we have space here at Del Rio on the Walmart property? Sure we do, but we think there's going to be a deed restriction that's going to prohibit that. Could
they
go somewhere else?
The question that Ms. Funk asked, is there any other property that might accommodate such a size?
Really isn't, without packaging multiple parcels together and re-envisioning a whole different part of our city into something different. Dove Creek would have been perfect. There's other areas in the city that we could re-envision, looking at areas down by where Style House Furniture is and some other areas there. And that's what our El Camino plan is doing, is looking at the market area of that and the marketability of it and multiple properties together to see, hey, could we have a long-range plan that it could accommodate something else in the future? But reality is we are not property rich, and it's difficult to place these kinds of things given the topography. Our constraints physically with the Salinas River and the Highway 101. Yeah, it's challenged. So that's why properties like this, the Del Rio specific plan, we need to so carefully plan them out, because it's not like we've got, you know, in other cities where you can extend out eastward or out into big flat areas. We just don't have that land mass. And at a certain point, we're going to be maxed out with all of, you know, our development potential. And that's really not too far in the future.
Well, you brought up a good point that is talked about at other times. There are some properties that we are also wanting. We kind of stick to some zoning that we want to see preserved for commercial. And every time that shrinks, it reduces options. So, and I think you bring up a good point before I get back to public comment, that you're really looking at all of El Camino. We are looking at this right now, but you are also doing a corridor study to look at all options, and that might, it might be more, the question might be more of an answered in elsewhere, like you say. But I'm going to go ahead back to public. I wanted to, since this is going to be a topic similar to we've had before, we're going to have a little more leeway. We'll go ahead and try to give an answer to the questions as they come. We don't have a lot of folks here, so you can have a second bite at the apple. If you want to redirect your questions, we can take the time to do that tonight. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor, Council.
State your name for the record.
Oh, Mark Darris, Tascadero. Thank you. With respect to the deed restriction, I understand Walmart's need or desire to do that. It's a business decision. They have a Walmart 15 miles away, and they would want to protect their investment there. So it makes sense. I don't like it, but it is their right. But you'd mentioned earlier that there were other items that they were wanting, or at least was in a deed restriction, you know, a brewery and stuff like that, that doesn't really compete with their Walmart brand. And my question is there any legal recourse for something like that to say, look, you're deed restricting something that truly does not compete with your brand, and all you're doing is locking up his property for whatever reason that they might have beyond that. I'm just wondering if there's a legal recourse, something that the city could do to fight that type of a restriction.
Well, I guess there's always a legal recourse. How much do you want to spend? Does the city attorney want to respond to that, or our community development director?
You're pointing at me? Okay, I'll take that one. Yeah, we did research this issue, and based on our research, it appears that Walmart does have the legal authority to impose restrictions on the deed. Of course, the party that's buying the property doesn't have to buy the property, and, you know, if they don't agree with the deed restrictions. So, and that is always something that could be negotiated between the parties. I mean, for example, if Walmart found a willing buyer to buy it without a deed restriction, they might be willing to sell it without a deed restriction, assuming the price was right. So it's a negotiable issue.
Well, and you always hope that the negotiation is everybody wants something out of the deal, and you look for those opportunities. But too many unknowns at this point. Well, I think let's go with another question. Welcome.
Once again, Jeff Oslin, resident of Tascadero. Two concerns and two questions, I guess, and more for Phil. One would be, I'm in favor of any type of business whatsoever. As a business owner, business attracts business. So that's my statement. My question would be, is there any way to abolish, of course, the rotary concept, which I don't think is a good thing, but expand the overpass out so you have a left and a right to get on and off the highway a little differently, and maybe get some Caltrans funds now and start putting in for it, but they seem to be rich in funds, depending on the result of the election. That may help us a lot. And the second thing on the west side, being I'm a west side resident over there, I would be somewhat concerned on what goes in to create a lot more traffic. And it's obviously, you know, to be able to get on the highway and to be able to get down El Camino. So that's my questions, I guess.
Thank you. I don't know if our city engineer wants to jump in. I'm tired of talking about slow cog, so if you wanted to for a while. I mean, we are very, our particular overpass at Del Rio is rated up pretty high on the funding list if funding becomes available. We essentially got the last fully funded overpass in the county, which was 41-101. Ever since then, it's been a challenge. I think it comes down to what do we have to assess what the use requirements are going to be so we know what's needed. And then the question is, do we self-fund? What's the likelihood of getting other funds? Do you want to take a shot at that?
Sure, I can. Mayor, I know you're probably the most experienced with getting transportation funding here in the room, but currently that roundabout system is just the on and off ramp is priced at about $15 million. And so it's a steep cost to pay. It would be even more. They looked at some other ones, including widening the bridge. That bridge is pretty narrow, though, or not long, so you don't get a lot of queued storage for the left turns to go northbound or southbound on there. So that creates a little problem. And the structure to build the bridge is, you know, expensive and might even exceed that $15 million. But the whole three roundabout system there is meant to work together. I know, as Director Dunsmore mentioned earlier, that distance between El Camino and the northbound interchange is kind of a short distance. So the roundabouts are meant to keep traffic moving through there, not stack up. If they stack up, and you have a roundabout, let's say you have signals at the on and off ramps, keep the roundabout at El Camino, you know, you could possibly block up the roundabout traffic at El Camino by having a signal there at the northbound on and off ramp. So I know there's currently with the SB1 money, there's, you know, the regional significance of that is pretty big, and I know SLOCOG is watching this carefully. The city is expected to get about $650,000 a year initially in that money, but the regional effect would be much larger for that. For instance, the Y in 46 and 41 is funded with that SB1 money and everything else. But, you know, it's a steep increase, too, in the gas. So, but we should know more, obviously, in a couple weeks if that's going to continue the funding. You know, we're close now, but as Director Dunsmore mentioned, we're actually looking. We have WTrans doing some traffic analysis up here based on various land uses. Some of them were included in your packet. And a future meeting next month, we hope to come back and present that final report to you after we get through it and try to shoot holes in it as much as we can, because honestly, you know, we've already spent quite a bit of money on this, pursuing this roundabout design. So, you know, we don't want to just stop it without due process. And even if we did, you know, and then say Costco did want to build on the Walmart site, let's just say that happens, which it's pretty unlikely. But let's say Costco does want to build on this interchange, and that'll for sure trigger those needs for the roundabout. The work that we've done to date would not just be have to start over. We've done a lot of work already on this, and they could be reused if we 5-10 years decide we need to do these roundabouts.
Well, let me inject in there, because I think the best strategy for our city, one, it'd be great if we just got a lot of categorical money to do roundabouts, etc. But the reason we're in the situation we are is Walmart wanted to go forward first, and it has the highest use need, which triggered the very expensive infrastructure. And we'd be in the same boat if any large retail, say it's Costco, said, we want to go in. Well, we'd be still trying to figure out how you can't require other property owners to necessarily chip in before they're ready to build. You get reimbursed. You can spread the cost out, the fair portion of what the maximum build-out is to all the property owners, but they don't have to pay until later. So the city would be in the position figuring out how to do that. We're actually in a better situation now that there isn't a large retail that wants to build first, which would trigger all the costs. I've always hoped we could phase in the costs, but get the revenue coming in first. That's essentially what's happened with two hotels, one already done, three more coming. They have a lower usage, so it doesn't trigger the infrastructure cost need right away, but they're generating more revenue than retail would. That is about as good as it can get for us. If you maintain the plan for maximum build out that might allow for retail later, that would be fine, because later you got this income stream coming on and everybody else has to build in and pay their fair share towards that future infrastructure cost. So they're going to pay part of their permit fees. Just like when Walmart pulled a permit, came with $1 million check because that was their portion for the infrastructure. Everybody else is going to have to do the same thing. So it could actually be that we're able to get income stream prior to the cost going out. And so to answer the gentleman's question, I think that would be good for the city if that was the scenario. But I think the city's not going to be in a position to say who comes first. We're just going to be glad whoever comes along. But it could actually work out better for the city if the sequence was, and right now that's kind of working. You actually have hotels coming first that have a considerably lower resource need and brings in a higher income stream up front. So hopefully the city will bank that money towards that infrastructure need in the future.
Mayor O'Malley, if I may, a good example of what you just described would be Los Valley Road, and that bridge that was just built. That was conditioned by, and I'm sure Director Dunsmore would know more since he worked down in SLO at the time, but was conditioned with the Home Depot and that whole project down there, and it came later, albeit to some inconveniences to the traffic, but, you know, they had revenue coming in from all that development down there much, you know, for years and years prior to that bridge being built.
Yeah, most folks would like to get the money first before having to spend money. That's a kind of a basic good idea. Any other questions folks have, and Ms. Funk, if you have others, this is a good time. Either we're just kind of having a discussion, but also if you have questions, we can get further researched. The fact is just like when you actually ask our community development director, have you talked to Costco? Yeah, we called them already. You know, you'll find that your staff... Often, I have not come up with a question staff hasn't already given a lot of thought to. And that's good. That's the kind of staff you want to have. Any other questions, please come forward. Welcome, Ms. Funk.
Thank you. One brief question in follow-up on the issue about the roundabouts. Because, as you know, that people are intimidated at the thought of introducing that to the community. What's the volume of traffic, roughly, that we would, if it fell below, what's the cut point that requires the roundabout structure? And if the development were below a certain point, that we could accommodate the traffic flow with signalized interchanges? Intersections as opposed to roundabouts?
Thank you. And probably the answer is, hard to tell because there's so many variables. You want to take a stab at that because it's an engineering question and there's a lot of alternatives. And quite frankly, sometimes Caltrans changes the standards over time, like requiring ADA accessibility on a sidewalk adjacent to the roundabout or included in the roundabout that changes the whole cost picture. But with what we know, what would you say?
So I'm going to tell you, Mayor, that That depends.
Thank you.
That's a perfect segue into our next discussion that we want to have, because it really depends on what the movements are for that traffic. It depends on the time of day, and that is what we plan on going into a lot of detail at our next council meeting.
Perfect segue. Well, let me get back then to if there's any other questions from the public before we have staff move on. That's the city manager's nice way of saying, Mayor, I think we can move on because we're going to talk about that more in the future. So, but any other questions you'd like to get in the record that staff can research? Seeing that approach, back to you, Ms. City Manager. You're going to turn it back over to the engineer or the community development director.
I think that's it. What we're looking for tonight is we did have some of those scenarios in the back. Don't pay as much of the staff report. Don't pay as much attention to the numbers there. But those are the types of land uses that we're thinking of, and we want to run those scenarios. So the idea is to go ahead and have him continue to work on that, to finalize that. And then probably at our November 27th meeting or thereabouts, we'll bring you a traffic analysis that really talks about that. And it's going to be a traffic analysis really concentrating on that interchange and how all the traffic under the different land use scenarios affects traffic on that interchange. Because we do have a decision on, do we want to continue to move forward on the three roundabouts? What do we think the likely scenarios are going to be? Because there are a lot of scenarios where we wouldn't need those three. And if so, and if we think that's the most likely, then perhaps not moving forward with the interchange is our best decision. Once we do that, then we would gather more information for some of the other traffic impacts that we perceive Walmart might have in preparation for amendment of the specific plan.
Any other council, so I've closed public comment, any other council questions for staff? Go ahead.
The mayor mentioned timing, and it had always concerned me, and maybe it's easy for me to say because I wasn't on the council, but the arrangement made that Walmart got to go first, as the mayor just described, which put the burden for the freeway interchange improvements on the annex property. The biggest concern I've had throughout this ever since Walmart said they weren't coming is, you know, it would be if Walmart didn't sell. Or, you know, if they take their time because they in all likelihood want to put a deed restriction, because God knows we'd all love to have a Costco. We've all talked to Costco people. And, you know, I think it's almost certain that Walmart will do whatever they can, including not selling, to preclude a Costco. So we have these other potential uses. But what happens if the property doesn't sell? How do we get out of the Walmart first mode, you know, that goes with the specific plan, so that it becomes whoever, you know, has a concrete plan to want to build something gets the chance to build it first come, first serve. You know, if the property is still in Walmart's hands with that specific plan.
Well, that's the point, and that's why other uses are going forward now. The issue was who was there to come forward first? No, what we didn't have the other investors at the time.
No, I understand, but those are very limited. I mean, the hotel is great, of course, as you described. But everything else is fairly limited. And the annex, if Mr. Dunsmore could answer, you know, to what extent can they proceed if Walmart still owns the property and the specific plan is still the in-place specific plan?
Well, I think, isn't it that, yeah, if Walmart goes forward, they've got infrastructure, but those other landowners can go forward if they don't have the requirement, and that's what's happening.
And regardless of the overpass improvements, whether they will be needed or not, and the timing of that, it's time to amend a specific plan. And I think that's what we touched on in strategic planning. We can amend a specific plan to alter that timing based on what we know today without this traffic analysis. But it's more complete if we do the traffic analysis, understand the future land use scenarios, and do a more complete package and a more precise amendment to go forward. So either way, we need to amend it to make that happen, and we can make that happen to release development, let it move forward so that Clint Pierce on his side of this particular specific plan can move forward.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. We can proceed to amend this the specific plan if Walmart, it takes a long, long time to go through whatever they want to do as far as selling.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
That's
and,
what
you
I
know,
want.
It will alter what can happen on the Walmart site or when it can happen. So in other words, it'll shift that entitlement to another part of the specific plan. Should somebody still want to do a large retail store there, you know, we're back at that whole scenario. But essentially, that'll have to wait until interchange improvements are done. But I think under our assumed scenarios, you know, we're not seeing that large retail environment happening regardless of Walmart selling the property or not, and regardless of a deed restriction happening or not. It's just not the trend anymore. So that's really where we're going.
No, I understand. I just want to make sure that we the council have the latitude to amend the specific plan.
Yes.
Potentially over, you know, Walmart's objections if they are sitting on it.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And folks are moving forward on their property with actual higher income producers in any case. Ms. Fonzi.
Thank you. I wanted to follow up on Charles's question. Do specific plans ever expire because conditions have changed so radically over a length of time, or maybe the EIR? What I'm getting at, is there a drop-dead date that we need to respond and revise the specific plan to keep this alive?
A specific plan doesn't really expire. It really can stay indefinitely. But EIRs do get stale. They do kind of age. And they age because conditions change and traffic volumes change and things develop, you know, around the area that change what that original analysis meant. So those things do change. What also changes is the cost of infrastructure improvements and the process for reviewing those infrastructure improvements and Caltrans and other agencies' expectations on those infrastructure improvements. So those things have a limited lifespan. The specific plan itself doesn't, but all the things that kind of go into it, the nuts and bolts that hold it together, do change. So if a specific plan doesn't build out within a 10-year time frame per se, and we're 6 years into this, conditions around it will change such that when that development does finally come along, it may need to be reevaluated under new sets of criteria and under new infrastructure costs.
Any other council questions? Seeing none, we will also close that, and there's nothing for no action for us to take on this item. You're going to continue to get
research. No, this was just an informational item. Thank you, Mayor.
Very good. So that concludes item two. Council announcements and reports or committee reports. We're going to start with Councilmember Barbeau. Move right on to our right.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. I, as part of the Homeless Services Oversight Council, I think I'm going to attend a meeting tomorrow, one of their public forums they're having discussing possible uses of the $4.8 million of HEAP, or Homeless Emergency Assistance Program, funds that will likely come from the state to the county as a whole. And so I'm just going to go to that and see where they might be headed with that, what kind of ideas they're discussing and offering up for the expenditure of those funds.
Thank you. Ms. Moreno?
EBC tomorrow, and that's it for now.
All right.
LAFCO Met, we handled the annexation of the Delidio property, which is on the east side of 101, west side, big annexation. Interesting terms regarding the split with the county, which I have shared with Rochelle, which could have an effect on any annexations in the future if we go there. And also I'd like to announce that our own Brian Pyrick was selected as LAFCO's legal counsel and will be serving them as well. Congratulations.
Thank you. Good job.
Councilmember Fonzi, did LAFCO, were they at the point of actually approving that annexation, or is it just under discussion?
No, it was an approval.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Very cool. No report. And no report. Any staff reports? Well, then we are adjourned. Thank you. I saw that.
No.
Yes.
That's no problem at all. That's why you and I have a what's it, Jake? Oh, well, you know, there's a few things that are coming up that I have to interject on at some point. I'm just waiting for the bombs to drop.
Yeah, I know.
There's two things, and I'm going to be pretty... I've made a statement on one, and that's where you and I are at odds.